Lip smacking good.
Hi, everybody out there. Welcome to another episode of Lip Smacking Good. Well, the motto of this show is, if your lips ain't smacking, it ain't good. I have a very, very special guest with me today. I'm excited that she's here. This is Mel, and she is one half of the Good and Terrible Show, which is on the Cold Slither Network podcast. Mel, go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody.
Hey, everybody. I'm Mel. Obviously, if you are on Twitter, I'm Beauty Jackson on Twitter. So I'm the person yelling on football Sundays at the television screen and yelling at everything else the other 6 days of the week.
Cool. I'm excited about having Mel on because I'm going to tell you how I got in contact with you. Yesterday, for the first time ever, we went to this brand new restaurant. We seen it open it up. It's called Flaming Fish is the name of it. No, Flaming Shrimp is the name of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. We've seen they've been working on it for a few months now, but we didn't know when it opened up. So I say, Roger was like, I want to go to see if they were opening up soon. I said, yeah. I said, let's go see. So we went by there, and yesterday was actually their first day opening. And when we went in there, it is a place from Louisiana. I don't know if it's a chain, but I know it's a place from Louisiana because they had a big old TV screen, and the lady was talking, and she was talking about how to eat crawfish, and you know, it had like the big bowl that they have. I want to call it a bowl, a seafood bowl, and stuff like that. And it was like, you know, hey, you know, welcome to New Orleans and things like that. So I was like, oh, this must be a chain. And Roger's saying, isn't Beauty Jackson from the Good and Terrible Show from New Orleans?
Sure.
I think she is, baby. I say, let me go hit her up. So he wanted to let you specifically know that it was his idea.
It was him. I'm going to have to send him a special bowl of gumbo.
Yes. So just let him know.
Absolutely.
So he was excited. He was like, well, let her know that it was my idea. So I will not take none of the credit from
you.
Oh,
my goodness.
You get 100% of the credit.
Too funny. He wouldn't even split it with you.
You know what? It was... No, not the credit. Now, he wanted 100% of the credit. Now, the food is a whole nother thing.
Yeah. You got to let him know you planted the seed.
And that's what he did. He planted the seed, and I thought about it. And I said, you know what? I was like, I'm going to see when I get her on. And we went back and forth across Twitter, and she is here. So for those of you that are a fan of her show, you can get all of her.
Yes.
I am just excited because the place we went to last night, they actually opened up last night.
Okay.
Last night was the first night. And... when you looked on the menu was hilarious because the menu, you got to choose, like, from between all these meats.
Okay.
And some of it was market price. You know, I get a little scared about market price. Market price could be...
Yes,
market $1.99. Market price could be $200. I was like, I don't know what market price was. But, you know, it wasn't expensive at all. Okay. It really, really, really wasn't. And everything on it was, like, by the pound. This was new to us, like I said, because we're in Charlotte, North Carolina, so we're not near the ocean. So, I mean, we eat seafood, you know, we have sushi, but, you know, I didn't know much, but I knew that this was kind of a structure from somewhere near the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And he ordered spicy shrimp, a pound of spicy shrimp, and I ordered a pound of crawfish, drunken crawfish.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I never had crawfish because I was like, I heard about crawfish. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to look like. I'm very adventurous when it comes to food. I'll eat anything once, anything.
They look like little mutant stunted lobsters.
They do. They do. And you know, and the shrimp had faces too, looking at
them.
They were humongous and they were big. And that's what we got, but you can also order like the combos where you got like a pound of shrimp, a pound of crawfish. You could get a pound of crab, a pound of lobster.
So they're mostly like a boiled seafood So they don't sell, do they? They don't sell their like fish and stuff like by the pound, right?
No, okay. No. At least when we looked at the menu, yes. I didn't see any. It was more of the crustaceans.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine that they would. And that's typical, only because they're so tiny. Tiny in comparison to, you know, to other things. It's really, when you think about it, kind of a fair way to sell it. Like, if you sell me 15 shrimp, number one, they're not necessarily going to be the same size. There's just a lot of hinky stuff that can go on when you're selling, like, by the item and stuff like that. So by the pound is typically how I've always bought, like, boiled seafood. Some places will do crabs. Crabs are tricky, especially if you do live, because some places will sell them actually by the crab. But if you're lucky, you can find the occasional place that sells crabs by the pound, which is always what I prefer. So okay. Crabs are more of a mixed bag. Shrimp and crawfish, things like that, you're more likely to get those by the pound. Crabs, you're more likely, sometimes you might get a by the pound place, but that's rare. You're typically going to get that by like the crab, or if it's like the large king crabs, you'll get it pay like by the cluster. So.
Okay, this place was by the pound because they had like three levels of combos, so I'm assuming that it was more like you could order like we did, which was more of a smaller version of it, and a pound of food. I didn't realize how big a pound, like it is a lot of food. Right, so we ordered the small because we seen that large, so I was like, well, it's just me and you. I was like, we would have got a combo. I was like, man, we would have taken all that shit home. Because like I said, I underestimated a pound.
Yeah.
And I think they had, what'd you call it, oysters in there.
Oh, okay.
Yams in there, and it was by the pound. And depending on the combo, you got more choices, and they added more stuff on it. And when you got the combos, you got the corn and the potatoes and stuff to come with it, too. But with ours, we got the individual, so we just got the shrimp and the crawfish. And the weird part about it, like I said, this is my first time there, so I'm just going through the experience from people who've never experienced this before. So when they come, they just give you this big bag. Like, it's all tied up, and it's this big bag. And I was like, okay, what is it? And it was funny, though, because we went in there, the table had, like, the white paper across the table, because we didn't realize how messy it was. They gave us bibs, so we didn't know what we was about to get into. And
they can be really juicy, like, and they'll hold in, sometimes they'll have like little pockets where like when you break it open, the head will hold like a lot of liquid, and so it's messy, and then there's all that little gunkiness in there.
Right. And so me and my husband had jokes because when you would crack some of them open, they would literally spit across the table, like, because it was so juicy and so full of the seasoning. You would crack it open, it was that, psh, and I was looking like juice. I was like, oh, so I was looking at the rest of it. This is why they gave you bibs and shit. Like, you don't want to come in here being cute, because if you are, you get very, very disappointed. Because they was like, you want gloves? I was like, no. I was like, wait a minute, give me some gloves. This shit was hot.
Now I'm an old pro, so I don't too much do the gloves. And depending on the crab, I don't even necessarily use crab crackers, like the little cracky things that they give you. I just go in, like, I crack them with my teeth, crack them in half, whatever. Like, the crackers for me are the last resort.
Okay, because that's something I talked about, because I've seen so many people must have already knew what it was. Because when we went in, it was packed, and I seen a lot of people eating with their bare hands, so I was like, well, I eat my bare hands too. I hit that, so I was like, oh, wait a minute, this is hot. I was like, no wonder why. You know, folks out on gloves, and this was like our first time, especially with the crawfish. My first time eating crawfish, so I put out on Twitter and Facebook, hey, how the hell you eat crawfish? I ordered it, I don't know how to eat it. I was like, I wanted to be adventurous, but I was thinking, oh Lord, I might have been too adventurous. Oh, I can look like a fool at the table.
When I was little, I was really squeamish, so it took me a long time to get into doing crawfish at all. And we had a rule growing up. If you were gonna eat shrimp, that means you had to help shell them if we were gonna like do fried shrimp. And I was so squeamish about touching raw shrimp. I would miss out on the shrimp like every rip because I didn't earn my weight. So it was a long time before I even really, I wouldn't say long time, but I was like about maybe 9 or 10 before I really was getting into eating crawfish and pulling that. Because it's, and I'm also weird about pulling apart things that used to be alive. Like it's just, it's kind of sick when you think about it. I'm going to just rip it in half. And like, you know, so.
Very vicious. What is shelling? I don't know.
Oh, like taking the shell off the off the shrimp. And like, so, you know, taking the head off, the tail, the little exoskeleton, all that stuff. And then deveining them. Like if you look at a rush shrimp, there's that little black line of like mm-hmm. waste and grossness or whatever across the back. Yes. And so we would, you know, take that out as well. And there's actually one over it and one under it. A lot of people, a lot of times when you get shrimp that's deveined for you, most of the time, if you're like particular about the, you know, deveining your shrimp, you should check underneath because usually they only take out the top vein and not the bottom.
Right. And I didn't know it had a bottom. But yeah, most of the time what they cut it across the back, which is almost like a butterfly, which mm-hmm. makes it out. And they normally just dig in there and just dig out that particular piece. But you're telling me something new because I didn't know it was a piece underneath the bottom. But mm-hmm. with these, they were humongous and they actually had a face. So,
yeah. That's what I just described. That's typically like for when you're frying and gumbo and things like that.
The smaller shrimp,
yeah,
right?
There's a good chance that when you get boiled shrimp, you might have some that are deveined. There's a good chance that you'll get some that just aren't deveined at all, which, I mean, the stuff won't kill you. It's kind of a mind over matter thing for the
right.
most part.
Right.
And
if it wasn't, it was delicious.
Right,
I don't know.
Right. And most of the time, definitely in that case, especially if you're getting, because the shrimp, you know, the shell is still on, so mm-hmm. they're not doing that bottom vein. Typically in steamed shrimp or boiled shrimp either, even if they do the top.
Now, since yesterday was my first time ever eating it, what is your process for eating
crawfish?
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, if you've never been to a crawfish boil, this time this was your crawfish and, you know, whatever, if you get with the Louisiana people, speed is your goal. It's like the Hunger Games, literally. They pour the sack out, you start grabbing your pieces, and basically my technique is to kind of rip the head off, and there's like a little tail meat, and I just pinch the bottom of the tail, and that piece that's hanging out, I just rip it out with my teeth. And I've been doing it long enough, I can get it in one fell swoop. And
okay, because...
So you gotta keep it moving. Yeah, if you like carefully, like, peel the whole shell back off the tail, girl, you're going to miss out. You sit down with a bunch of Louisiana people and carefully pull off the shell, and you will have, like, 3 crawfish to their 50.
Okay.
Because, no games.
Yeah, because it was my first time, and it was me and him, so, you know, it was very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never did it before. I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't really... You know, and I told Roger, I looked at Roger, I said, it has to be a quicker technique. Because Roger said it was a lot of work, which it was, but we didn't mind though. But I told him, I said, babe, I said, I bet you it's a quicker way to do this. I said, we really need to get with somebody that knows how to do this
mm-hmm.
so that we could do it better.
Yeah, you pinch the bottom of the tail just to like hold it firmly where you're not really holding, you know, a bunch of actual tail meat so that it doesn't break in half or whatever. You make sure that you have like a good hold. Like a good firm hold, because you don't want to bite through, because then you'll rip it off too. So you want to have like a good firm enough hold with your teeth, pinch it at the bottom, and you pull like equal, like with your teeth and with your hand, and kind of pull it out, and then you just keep it rolling.
Oh, do you? Some people tell me about sucking the head.
I definitely suck the head.
Okay.
They have all the juicy goodness in it. Now, sometimes some of them are a little too gunky, and I don't suck those. That sounds so nasty.
How can you tell? She said, that sounds so nasty. How can you tell?
Well, you can look. Like, you'll see. It's like a little, like a kind of yellowish stuff in it. I to this day, I don't know what they are. But or what that stuff is, but it'll be like a little, I mean, it's, I guess, you know, crawfish innards or whatever. And so if it's like too thick and viscous, I don't fool with it. But if it's like a good, like liquidy, whatever, yeah, I'm down in that.
Yeah, because
What most Louisiana people do not do, if there's a straight crawfish, because you know how most of them are curled, like the tail curls in.
Yes.
If it's a straight crawfish, we don't rock with those.
Oh.
Now, once upon a time, the folklore was always that the crawfish was dead and, you know, whatever, whatever, and they're bad for you, whatever. And there's been a study fairly recently that said, you know, the straight crawfish, they're fine, blah, 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 blah. And so I posted the article, and me and everybody else from Louisiana were like, fuck what you heard. Ain't nobody eating those straight crawfish of death. Like, we ain't doing that.
Oh, and you know what? This makes sense. This is why the shirt was like, we only eat the curled tails.
Yeah.
Like, the shirt said, I was like, what are you
eating? Yes, yeah, that's the thing. We don't do straight crawfish. And one time my son was about to eat one. He was like, they're just as good. I was like, no, they're not. Not if you're a child of mine. And I'm not even that parent that comes down hard on the children's things, but I'll be damned if you're going to live away from my hometown and then go in front of my family, embarrass me eating straight crawfish like you ain't got no damn sense. Put that thing back and go get you a curly crawfish, boy. Play that. Not shaming me in front of my family.
Shame in front of my family. Were you born in Louisiana?
Uh-huh. I was born in New Orleans. I lived in New Orleans until I was 28.
Oh.
That's why, like, that's when I pumped so hard for my Saints on Sundays, I've been doing that my whole life. So that's why I'm so, I am a New Orleans girl, born and raised.
Well, how is Mardi Gras? Because I've never been.
So, Mardi Gras is the best, worst time you can ever have. It really depends. So, it's a fun time. Like, I'm not one of those people who's a local and they're so put out by local things. Like, I'm over it. It's not a big deal. Mardi Gras is always great. The draw of it to me is everybody's just like getting together to have a good time. And it's just a friendly atmosphere in a lot of ways. And then, you know, you can go places and get a little nasty, and you got the ladies like flashing their titties, and you'll probably see a couple of hand jobs on the corner and, you know, stuff like that. Like, that happens very often at Mardi Gras. Like, Mardi Gras is wild. So people aren't overstating how wild it gets out there. It gets very wild, and it can be very crowded. There's a song, Ain't No Place to Pee on Mardi Gras Day, because a lot of businesses, the ones that are open, are not, like, letting you run in to use their bathrooms because you're drunk, and, like, everybody's drunk.
Paying, too.
Right. And you're not paying customers, so they can't just really afford that traffic. So they have, like, these porta-potties, and New Orleans is very humid. Like, even when it's cold during Mardi Gras, it's probably cold and kind of damp. So you're like in this damp box of nastiness. So you just kind of like have to hold it. And so don't. And then the thing is, like, so many people, even if you are like a patron where you can use the bathroom where you are, you might not want to because everybody is drunk. And a lot of people, their aim isn't so good. So, like, it's just, it's a mess. It's so much foolishness. You're going to see people. I remember one day, or one year, I'm pretty sure this was Mardi Gras 2000, because I was pregnant with my baby girl, and I looked over and there was a gentleman it was 7:30 in the morning, and he had not gone home yet, and he was just at the bus stop, and he was just a fountain of vomit. Like, he was standing straight up, and somehow it arced up and flew out. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. Mm. It's like, and the people like the local, because the tourists and everybody, they're asleep, you know, because they've been out all night. So it's really just the locals. And we are so unbothered. It's like, oh, motherfucker's throwing up. Let me cross the street. You know, it's just like, I would also say in Mardi Gras and on Bourbon Street in general, There is not a safe puddle to walk in. Don't walk in any.
Avoid the puddles.
In the French Quarter during Mardi Gras and on Bourbon Street at any time in life. There's some unsavory things in those puddles. Never known anybody not to be unpleasantly surprised. It's quite likely pee and vomit. Maybe a little bit of semen. Probably a lot of semen.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's everything. Condoms on the ground. Like, and those are in my, and I won't say that's not everywhere in New Orleans or during Mardi Gras. There are definitely, like, some of the wilder activities. It's more contained to specific areas, but it's also not unheard of. So, yeah. But it's a good time. I tell anybody to go. I tell anybody to go to New Orleans at any point in time. It's a great place.
If I ever go visit, it would probably be during non-Mardi Gras time.
And that's the good thing about New Orleans as well, because there's really always something going on. And even if there's not like an actual festival or, you know, whatever, there's just like, there are a lot of great local performers, and it's a tourist city. So they're out there, you know, making money. You never know when you're going to bump into a free concert. You might bump into a free concert, from like a New Orleans legend. One year we were just in the French Quarter walking, you know, through Jackson Square, and Irma Thomas, who's a big deal in the New Orleans music scene, she was giving a free concert. So, mm-hmm. And it wasn't like we got there, I'd say like about 6-7 o'clock, and we were dancing until it was dark. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And that's one of the things that makes it a wonderful place, or made it a wonderful place for me to grow up. Because I had to be about, I think I was 10. Yeah, because that was actually my first time going with somebody who were not my parents. And we just had a good time. And that was just the environment I grew up in. Like, the good time can break out anywhere at any point in time. So, it's just one of those places you have to go. And it's very affordable. It's very affordable to visit New Orleans, especially if you compare it to, like, New York or D.C. or somewhere like that.
Yeah, because it's further down south. Does the city ever sleep?
No.
I didn't think so, because that's what I've heard. I heard when you go, you basically, mm-hmm. it's always, they say, it's always something to do, always.
Yeah, there's, and that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. They have a lot of places that are just, there's a lot of 24-hour joints. So there's just always, it's just in a constant state of motion. Yeah. It's just in a constant state of motion, and that motion is typically getting ready, you know, to make people feel welcome. Like, that's one of the things, like, I lived in a place where we were just constantly welcoming people. So I feel like that kind of shaped, well, I know it kind of, it shaped my personality, because I just carry that with me now. Like, if I meet you, our interaction, unless you're like a horrible person and I hate you, our interaction is going to be me making you feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just used to that. I want to see people have a good time. So if I could put a smile on your face, or, you know, say something nice or whatever, that's just kind of what I'm gonna do. And that was just my background. I came from people who were really hospitable, really giving, really kind. It's not a very rich city, but the community in New Orleans was, and I feel so weird still saying is, because I haven't lived there in 9 years, but the community there was always one where we didn't have a lot, but we shared what we had.
Okay.
And that was just something I was always taught, that, and it was always reciprocated. I had a neighbor when I, not too long before I moved away, before I left, because I moved away, well, like a lot of people, you know, when Katrina hit. And I had a neighbor who knew that I was in school, because I was carrying like 9 hours at UNO. I was working full time as a legal secretary, which isn't necessarily a, this is your time to get off and you're guaranteed to leave at this time type of job. And I had two kids, and my kids were toddlers. And my neighbor would just come over sometimes and knock on my door and give me a big bowl of red beans or some pork chops or like whatever to make sure that my kids, you know, were eating and, you know, I could study and stuff like that. And it's just, it was those little things that made it a really hard place to leave for me.
Wow. I can understand that because because we're not as far south as you, but it is very hospitable here as far as, you know, you walk around, people say, hey, y'all, they speak, you know, unless you're an asshole, people are not really going to be nasty to you.
Right.
And were you in New Orleans when Katrina hit?
I left. I left 2 days prior. I left out that Saturday, the Saturday before Katrina hit. I believe it hit us on a Monday. But I was already in Shreveport, Louisiana, which is a good bit away from New Orleans. It's like 5 hours. I have family there. I ended up basically losing everything though, because I lived there 28 years. We've never had a hurricane. And so though I was fine with taking a precaution of leaving, I didn't, the year before, sorry, a little background, the year before we were threatened with a hurricane that was going to be a sure thing to hit us. And we packed our cars, like we packed everything. My dad had a Toyota Tundra. He had a hitch. Like we had this ridiculous amount of stuff. It took us forever to get to our destination. You know, it was a headache. So the second time when we left for Katrina, we were like, nobody's going to do all that. Like me and my dad were about to kill each other and we weren't even in the same car for that first sojourn. So I was like, we're not even going through all that. And, you know, most of us just kind of brought a couple of pairs of clothes, a couple of sets of clothes. I packed my, you know, some necessary things, but that was it. So I left before everything kind of went down, but I ended up still losing pretty much everything.
How was it to rebuild?
For me, it was easier. A lot of people in New Orleans made it out easier if they didn't own things there. Like if you didn't own your home, it was a lot easier for you to start over because that's not yours. You know, all you have to do is clean up and kind of, then it's just basically almost like a dart, you know, on a dartboard on a map, picking where you want to live. People who owned homes, that was a little more difficult. So I was, depending on how you look at it, lucky enough to not own a home. And I ended up getting FEMA funds. So I was basically able to replace everything fairly quickly. Without a lot of fanfare. So I had the financial help. And since I was already considering moving anyway, I don't want to use the word fine because it's not fine. It's a very traumatic and jarring way to lose your home or to relocate in that fashion. Even though I was halfway out the door, it was still like, damn, I wanted to come back. What the hell?
Right, to visit a home.
So it, you know, it, on the one hand, it shoved me out the door and it enabled me. I was able to not really struggle to rebuild my life materially, but there was just, and there remains, to be perfectly honest, like an emotional void, because there's just a lot of things that were there that just can't be replaced. You know, whether it's a place you used to go or just being used to seeing the same people, you know, when you go home, like you don't, I go home and it's a little, it's more different every trip. And the more different it becomes, the more it's changed. With each visit, I stay away a little longer. And I know it's partially a mental thing.
Oh, yet, so
I have not been home. I'm a very bad daughter. I have not been home in 4 years. and some of those have been, you know, like other things, you know, other factors contributed to that. So I wasn't able to, but it's still, I didn't necessarily have a big rush to get back
right
there. So.
And a yearning. That's completely understandable. And also, mistake me if I'm wrong, weren't you out in California or something?
No, I wasn't in California. After that, I lived in D.C.
Okay.
The opposite coast.
Okay.
Yeah, I lived outside of D.C. I lived in Silver Spring and then Rockville, Maryland for 8.5 years.
Wow. Well, now, what was the big transition between being down, way down south to up north?
So, Maryland is a very strange place, or that region is very strange, because I went from being in a place where people have basically lived their whole lives. There's a very tight-knit sense of community. Mm-hmm. They know each other. You know who you're going to see. You know who you're going to bump into. You know that you and Ms. Johnson go to Winn-Dixie the same time every Friday, and you know you got to give 10 extra minutes because she's going to talk your head off by cold cuts. Like, you know all of that in New Orleans. Mm. When I moved to the D.C. area, it's very transient there. Like, it's just a lot of people using it kind of as a stop on the journey.
Right. Of life.
Yeah. And I didn't think, and when I moved there, I told myself I would give it 5 years more because I was always told how expensive Maryland was.
Yep.
So I said, you know, I'm going to give it 5 years just to see, you know, what I can do here before I commit to buying a house. And thank God I didn't jump because, you know, when I got my money from FEMA, a lot of people were like, well, you could use that to buy a house and blah, 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 blah. Thank God, because I moved there in 2005. Could you imagine what would have happened if I'd have bought a house in Maryland and then the market went crazy in 2008? Because I'm sure I would have gotten, like, I'm an idiot, so I would have gotten on some kind of janky ARM or whatever else. So that wouldn't have gone well for me. It was just very different to be used to people who just weren't going to stay. They weren't going to stay at the job, you know, because everybody there is looking for the next leg up. And there's not anything wrong with that, but Mm-mm. It's just different when you're used to the same. You know, and I after a while, you know, I it took me a really long time to, number one, make that place feel like home.
Okay.
And once I realized that Maryland just wasn't going to work, living there just wasn't going to work, it was fairly easy to say goodbye to that area. I miss my friends, of course, but there are certain things, like, you know, I got used to, and I'm used to certain conveniences, but I don't particularly, like, there's nothing that I need every week from D.C. So,
okay.
You know, it's, and now I'm in Pittsburgh, and it's more like New Orleans in that people are typically lifelongers. Everyone knows everyone. It's a smaller place. You know, I'm in a smaller area again. So conversely, I've already established routines here, and I've only been here since April, the end of April. So it's funny how life works.
Well, you was talking about Pittsburgh. We was actually up there last weekend. We went to my brother-in-law's wedding.
Okay, I saw the pictures. Y'all had a good time.
We had a wonderful, wonderful time. And number one, Pittsburgh is a big-ass state. I did not realize how big Pittsburgh was because we was like, yeah, we're going to Pittsburgh. I mean, we're going to Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, where's Philly? Okay, there's Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's here across on the other side of the state. I was like, God almighty. I was like, this place is bigger than I thought.
And a funny thing, it is easier, it's a shorter drive for me to get from D.C. to Pittsburgh than Philly to Pittsburgh. It's not like a drastic, but I think when I Google mapped it, it's like an extra 30 minutes getting from Philly to travel within the state. So that's funny.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is that Pittsburgh is known as a steel town.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is actually a really small, big town because, you know, when you see TV, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, every football team in America, when the Steelers come to town, it's guaranteed you, it's probably going to be close to more or more Steelers fans mm-hmm. at your stadium than your home team. I know that's how it is here in Carolina. So they, you know, the fans out of the area were really, really deep. And when we went up there, the people was very, very friendly. They were very nice. Cause my, sister-in-law, she's Italian.
Okay.
And they are all about their family. When I tell you all about the family, all about the family. And it was just so much love and so much joy and so much happiness. And we had such a wonderful time. Like, I've been to Pittsburgh, but I've been riding through on my way to New York.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so this is the first time we actually got to sit down and stop, you know, and actually enjoy. And we're definitely going to make more trips up there. And now, since I know that you're up there, next time we make a trip, we'll let you know.
Yes, please.
So we
Pittsburgh is a
get up.
It's a Pennsylvania is a beautiful state.
It is.
Pittsburgh is a very scenic city. Like, it's a steel town, so I expected it to just kind of be a little blah. But it's very mountainous, and there are just a lot of beautiful places. Like, I live in Mount Washington, and there are overlooks. Right, and I'm very close to the edge. So there are overlooks that I can walk to and basically look out, you know, into downtown, and you're looking down on the rivers, and it's so beautiful. Like, it's just, they're just breathtaking. There's just a breathtaking natural beauty here. And it's so funny because you almost think that people take it for granted and think everywhere looks like this, and it doesn't, they don't,
it's
a really nice place. Like,
It is beautiful, and it actually reminds me of some of the places down in North Carolina and South Carolina. Some of the structure of the buildings are similar to some of the buildings down in Charleston, South Carolina, which is some of our which is me and Roger's favorite place to go vacation, Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay.
And it was relaxing, I can tell you that much. Mm-hmm. It was, the mountains are beautiful. We had a beautiful time going through the mountains and seeing everything. So we didn't get to Pittsburgh, but it was one of those things. But next time we go, we definitely will.
Yeah.
And have you heard anything about, like, Amish country? Because we didn't get to do any of that. Next time we want to go visit.
I have heard, but I haven't been. Now, my sister, by the luck of the draw, my sister moved to Lansdale, Pennsylvania, which is outside of Philly. It's about an hour outside of Philly. And I think she's gone to Amish country a few times, because I don't really drive, so I don't go anywhere outside. I can't get to on the bus. But I know she's gone to Amish country a few times. There are a lot of great, like, orchards and stuff here in Pennsylvania in general. A lot of good farmers markets. Lot of the Amish farmers will come to certain farmers markets and sell stuff, and that's always delicious.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I've heard some of their stuff. It's like, everybody say whenever they go, they say they normally sell out of everything.
Yeah.
They say it's normally fresh. It's like, you can't buy it nowhere.
Yeah.
They say a lot of it's like homemade, where it's like, basically, if you don't buy it there, you'll never buy it anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's amazing. The food here. Now, the restaurants are kind of hit and miss for me. But the food, as far as, like, the home cooking food, which is my thing anyway, so delicious, so delicious. And a lot of people here are into, you know, gardening. And that's a thing that I didn't necessarily experience in D.C. because a lot of us, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily, you know, the people that I interacted with, we did a lot of, like, apartments, condos, you know, that type of thing. So you might have an herb garden. Yeah.
So, you know, it was rare that you got that, you know, that space. If you did, you were outside of the areas.
Right. So my coworker, she does a lot of her own gardening, and she brings stuff into me. Oh my goodness, it's so good. One of my favorite things about moving here is I now have a garden, which I have never had as an adult in my own place, because I've always rented.
Me either. So
I've always rented, like, condos. You know, like I said, condos, apartments. You know, whatever. I never really. And the one time I had a home that I rented, for whatever reason, everything was cemented, so I couldn't have grown anything if I wanted to.
Okay.
So now I have this fairly spacious garden that I'm gonna kind of make into my little dream self-sustaining food source. Because after having homegrown tomatoes, not tomatoes, because I've had those before, but homegrown cucumbers, oh my goodness.
The best thing ever, ain't it?
My coworker, she brings them in. She has her cucumbers that she brings in. She brings mm-hmm. cucumbers and sometimes peppers, but I'm partial to the cucumbers. And they're so good. I have never had a crispier cucumber in all my life.
Right. And I tell people, like, God bless my mother-in-law and father-in-law. I don't know what we're going to do when they leave this here earth. Because them people, especially my father-in-law, loves to garden. So he has, like, tomatoes, squash, cucumbers, peppers. I think one time they even did watermelons. Like, that's their thing. And so a lot of times, they just give me a big grocery bag. And they be like, babe, you want something out in the garden?
Mm-hmm.
And they filled it up. And I remember taking it home, and it was some of the best vegetables. I think it's pesticide-free.
Yeah.
It's spermicide-free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has nothing. Like, it's just pure rain, dirt, ground, you know, tilling, like, the sweat of your brow type of food. And I'm like you, it is some of the best food you will ever eat. I was like, oh, my gosh. This is summer because it's sweet, like, because it's that natural sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't describe it. Like,
no.
It doesn't last as long as the food that you do in the grocery store. But the biggest reason why is because it's not pumped full of shit to make it last long. So you buy it. You better cook it within 2 to 3 days.
Better, yeah. And that's the good thing about it is, since you're basically growing your own product, you know, you're using it, but you're also replacing it. So that's the wonderful thing about growing your own stuff. Now, I will tell you that I've reached an impasse because my garden is right now full of weeds. Like, I just moved here and my life has been crazy, so I'm so embarrassed by my garden. It almost looks like a blighted home in the front right now. But the reason we kind of came to a standstill is I went one day, I was like, you know what, this is the day I'm doing it. I'm going into the garden, and I started pulling up weeds, and I have these pretty large, bodacious weeds in my garden, and I pulled one up, and there's a wall in front of my garden, and my house slopes up, and there's a wall that's about 4 feet high, so I'm almost, because I'm only 5'5", so I'm almost at eye level with what's going on, and I pull this weed out, and I'm going to pull another one, and I'm going to pull a third, and I see a worm that looked like the fucking worm in the subway train on Men in Black. The biggest one, not only was it the hugest worm I had ever seen, but it launched itself at me.
Oh!
I had never seen, I don't know what kind of X-Man worm this was,
And you weren't ready, so yeah, you didn't come for nothing to shoot at it.
I needed a gun. Like, I needed either a gun or a taser if I was going to keep doing this gardening shit. So I was like, nope. I went on inside. I couldn't do it. I did, I ended up Instagramming it because it was that freakishly large. I mean, who in the world expects that you're going to go and do some gardening and you got to get in a brawl for it all with a worm? Nobody is gonna be okay with that.
Yeah, because as far as they're concerned, they're looking at you like, I was out here first.
And my neighbor was looking at me like, are you serious? It's a worm. And I'm like, yes.
No, you don't understand. Yeah, because it's one of those things where people that garden don't understand. Yeah, because I'm like you, honey. I'm a flower killer. Like, you put flowers in my possession, they're gonna die. So I don't do flowers. And I don't do gardening or anything like that, cause I killed them all. And, I had like this pot, and, I took Miracle-Gro's friend Miracle-Gro on the weeds. So that shows how much I know between the flowers and the weeds. I don't know anything. So you don't want me out there gardening. I would probably flip a fool. No thanks.
Typically, I don't do living things that can't talk. That's one of the reasons I don't do pets. Like, the fact that I have children, number one, I feel like my children have a viable negligence case against the hospital for them being allowed to go home with me in the first place, because I am a scatterbrained nincompoop sometimes, most times. But like pets and plants and, you know, like a fish, or and like a poor fish does not stand a chance with me, because you can't even bark. You are shit out of luck if you are a fish in my possession. So yeah. I just don't do, because I feel like at some point you got to get your own cereal. You got to get your own cereal. You got to crack a joke. You got to
let me know you there. You
like
in trouble.
Something to let me know you that you have to have a fart time with perfect comedic timing. Like, I need you to do something to contribute to this relationship other than food, more food. Hey, bitch, give me food. Oh, and pick up my shit. So I don't do like pets. The only reason I'm going to do plants and I don't really do flowers either, because, oh, look at me. I'm just going to look pretty and die and get the fuck out of here. Food. I'm a girl, food. I might have a couple of flowers, like, to kind of jazz up the place or whatever, but it's mostly going to be food. I really, in a lot of ways, I'm a substance over style girl. So, yeah. My neighbors are going to see some beautiful-ass peppers where they have hydrangeas.
Yeah, well, honey, don't feel bad. Like, unless the gardener going to come, you don't have to worry about us either, because we've always lived in apartments. So, no, and when I was younger, my mom used to make us go out there and do all that foolishness, and I would get hot because I'm like, I ain't put that. And, you know, I could never say it to her face. I'll be mumbling up underneath my breath. I was like, she got me out doing this bullshit.
Wait!
So that completely turned, because she didn't make it fun. So to me, it turned me off to just the whole process and concept of you out there. It's hot, it's sweating, it's nasty.
Bugs sticking to your neck.
Right, and then I'm partially, now I'm, you know, black folks don't believe in allergies, but I'm allergic to grass, so that was a big turn off. I didn't know, I was nervous, I was itching to death.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, full blood.
Yeah. Then you get those no-see-ums, like if you're doing gardening in the evening, those like no-see-um bugs, those little bee things that seem to blend in your skin, and all you know is you feel piercing pain from out of nowhere. Like, those come out when you're gardening. Like, it's just a bunch of crap. Bees. Oh, I had bees that were, that had burrowed in my door. Like, they found a crack in my door, and they were just, like, zipping in and out. Just like, hey, this is my house now. And so whenever I would try to, like, I couldn't go through my front door for a couple of weeks. I couldn't work in my garden, because as soon as, like, they would hear, like, a little rustling, and everybody would come out like, bitch, I told you this is my house. So they didn't react to regular bug spray. So there is this spray that I had, because New Orleans has gigantic cockroaches. So they have this spray that I'm sure is going to cause me to grow like a third boob or something, but it's hella effective on getting rid of bugs. So I special ordered that from Louisiana, had it shipped to me, and I sprayed that in the door, and by nightfall, bees were done, son. And that's when I went into the garden and got attacked by the giant worm. So it's like, I just can't win. Nature whips up on me every time.
I was like, oh, you thought you had this fixed. Gotcha.
That's why I like to eat crabs. I feel like it's reparations.
Catch it with him back.
Yeah. Because crabs, because I make gumbo. And when I make gumbo, I buy my crabs live when I can.
Okay.
And they don't take very kindly to you, like, picking them up. It's really like deathmatch. And if you lean over on the wrong crab, like, they're going to reach up and try and pinch you. So, like, I feel like that's, like, nature kind of trying to give me the finger. And so I take great delight in boiling my own live crabs. Probably should be disturbed by how happy I get.
Okay, and how is that process? Like, I've seen, like, you know, the tank to end, but how is that process?
Now, crabs are, like, lobster. They're in that big, you know, the big, like, swimmy tank. But crabs,
I've seen lobsters, okay.
Yeah, crabs typically are in, they'll be in kind of like a damp, they can survive outside of water. So they're typically like in a damp, moist environment, you know, but not like, they're not swimming. So it's just like a bunch, there'll be like some water at the bottom, a billion crabs in like a little case or whatever, and you just have to like get your tongs and go for what you know. And they put up a fight. Like, when you hear the term crabs in a barrel, it's because, like, you'll pick one up and the other one will be, like, right there holding on to him and will not let go. And you have to be careful in trying to get your grip that you don't reach wrong and get all your hands jacked up. So it's...
Because they're like, nope, you ain't going, and mm-hmm. you ain't going. And before you know it, you got a string of them.
One time I was, my sister and I were doing battle with gumbo crabs. And we were at this market, and I was recording it because it was so hilarious. I started recording it because it was so hilarious. And then I realized when I play back the video, like, we're getting these crabs to kill them, and We Are the World is playing in the background. And that was hilarious to me because we're plotting fishy crustacean death. And, yeah, singing about peace and harmony.
How do you make your gumbo?
I use the old-fashioned New Orleans standard. You start with the roux.
Okay.
So I start with the roux, which is basically like a flour and oil mix.
Or is it flour and butter? What's the difference?
I use oil. Butter really isn't good for roux because butter burns faster.
Okay.
So oils that, like, burn really fast aren't really good for making a roux. You need to cook it a while, and you need it to get to a certain color so that your gumbo has that. Because gumbo, like good gumbo, kind of looks like dirty water. So you need your roux to get to the color right between chocolate and peanut butter.
Okay.
So you make your roux, you get it right between the, you know, you want it to be at that consistency. But you also have your other things that go in. Gumbo is pretty, there are a lot of different ways you can make a gumbo. You can there's like an okra gumbo, which is thicker. There's filet, like seafood gumbo, which is not nearly as thick. It's more soupy. Okra gumbo will almost feel more like a stew, almost in consistency.
Okay.
Not quite as thick as stew, but you know. Whereas filet gumbo is mostly like a soup with a lot of different, meats and stuff in it. It's, my girlfriend calls it meat soup. I typically put, shrimp, sausage, unless I'm dealing with non-pork eaters. I'll do shrimp, sausage, chicken, I'm forgetting a protein. I know it. Oh, I do two different kinds of sausages. I do a smoked sausage and andouille sausage. And crab. That's what I was forgetting. I do crab.
Okay.
So I boil the crab first, and I use like a Zatarain's crab oil for the crab. And I usually, for a standard pot of gumbo, I use about a dozen crabs. I get about a dozen crabs. I boil them and then I break them up. And I like my sausage, of course, it has a lot of grease in it. So you have to, this is a good rule of thumb. Like when you're doing anything really with sausage, it has so much grease in the sausage. It's just a good idea to like fry it down and get some of that oil off of and drain it. Because that oil is gonna, if you have an excess amount of oil in your gumbo, it's really gross. So you want to be mindful of that. You don't.
It floats to the top, doesn't it?
It exactly. It floats to the top. Of course, it's flavorless. So it's just not good. And then it's like, it makes you like sick and that kind of stuff. Like it can be so much. So because you still have, you know, like a lot of fat, you know, actually in the actual gumbo.
Right.
So I cut up like some of the, I actually only have two secret recipes. I am giving y'all more than I have ever given anyone with my gumbo, so that's how much I love you, Karen.
No shit.
My gumbo and my jambalaya recipes are like my secret recipes, so I won't give y'all like all my herbs and spices secrets.
No, you gotta tell me, you know,
but
that part. And
I use my, so like I, you know, I go with like, you know, I have, now one thing I will say, bay leaf and gumbo is pretty necessary, whether you're doing okra gumbo or like a seafood type. There's other, what they call, I think it's gumbo yaya, where you're not using seafood. So it's like mostly chicken sausage or, you know, earth animals. But I use like my spices and herbs. I use, of course, the standards of onion, garlic, bell pepper, celery, which is kind of a standard with most things that I cook.
Okay.
Celery comes and goes, but sometimes I do it without celery, sometimes I do it with celery, but I kind of like the flavor that celery gives it. And filet, I use gumbo filet, and then I have my other little.
What the heck is a filet?
It's a thickening agent. It's got like a flavor to it, but it's also a thickening agent. So you don't want to use too much, in the pot. Like you want to make sure, like I think I use maybe like, depending on the size, I use 1 or 2 tablespoons at the most. Okay. But it gives it like that thicker consistency.
Okay. And when you were talking about oil, you would use like a peanut oil, something with like a higher.
Well, I actually use, I tend to use vegetable oil.
Okay.
Sometimes I use canola.
Okay.
I kind of go back and forth with.
So you stay away from olive?
Or canola. Yeah, olive isn't a good one for making roux either.
Okay.
Olive oil definitely burns a little too fast.
Okay, so stay away from lard then?
So, I wouldn't do it. I kind of leave that alone because those burn a little fast, in my opinion.
Okay.
I tend to prefer to do my roux, especially for that, when I need a roux, like, that's gonna get to a... that I need to cook for a while and get to that dark consistency, the one that I need for gumbo, I prefer to use, like, I really prefer to use vegetable over anything. I'll use canola sometimes in a pinch. It burns up, if I'm not mistaken, canola burns a little faster, but I typically like to use vegetable oil. It's a pretty solid oil as far as making, as far as doing the roux. And a lot of people will say it's a half and half with the roux, but you really have to kind of use your eye and your judgment because half and half can be a little too, it can be a little too loose. And you want your roux to not only have the that color between chocolate and peanut butter, but you want it to almost have a consistency that's kind of thick. Like you don't want it to be really loose. You don't want it to be too loose, at least. So it's part of it is using your judgment when you make it, and you know you have to add that. And like my order of things may not necessarily be the same as other people's order, but I boil like my seasonings and you know my and stuff like that once I fry down like my sausage, I'll add that in, and my crab, and those are in probably longer as far as my proteins are concerned than anything. Another thing about removing the fat, even when you drain off the sausage, you still have to kind of go back and skim some of that oil off the top that the sausage will, you know, keep producing. And it's impossible to get all of it, but if you see it coming off the top, like it's just best to skim that remaining.
Okay, with like a spoon, just
yeah,
skim
just
it off.
Like take a spoon, just take a solid spoon and kind of skim it off and get rid of it. For shrimp, your shrimp, that's the last thing that you put in because shrimp cook extremely fast.
Yes.
And they'll get like mushy and nasty if you have them in from the beginning. So the shrimp has always been the last thing that I add into my gumbo. And anything, like all the ingredients typically that you use, it's best to go fresh. If you, your better gumbos have fresh ingredients and seasonings and not so much, like dry, like you wouldn't want to use like parsley flakes or dried, you know, this or that you can get like from McCormick's. If there's something that you can buy fresh and add into your gumbo, I would say do that.
Okay. Well, then now since we're talking about that, since you're from New Orleans, how do you do red beans and rice?
My red beans and rice, I like to do them. I always go back and forth whether or not I prefer them in the crock pot or or on the stove. And it really just, I don't know, depends on the bean and rice gods, which one is going to taste better to me. I do about, I start off with about 6 cups of water to a pound of beans.
Okay.
And I throw in all my, like my onions and, you know, all the seasonings that go in that. And I use bay leaf in my red beans and rice as well. It just adds a good flavor. Bay leaf adds a good flavor. Now, bay leaf too, if you've ever used it, it's not something that you like crumble up. You just put the whole leaf in there because it's not something at all. You don't want like to be stabbing your mouth.
Right, because it'll cut you. You'll be like, what's that? Yes. Yeah, that's that bay leaf that you left in there 3 weeks ago. You're like, oh, Lord.
So it's, so I, but I definitely like the flavor that it adds. So a fair few of like my New Orleans dishes. I use it in my gumbo, my jambalaya, and my red.
I use it in soups.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good in lentil soup.
Oh, I've never had lentil soup before.
Oh, lentil soup. It's, lentil soup is, like, lentils are delicious to me. It's probably my favorite legume or whatever. I think it's a legume, not a bean or whatever, but it's my favorite of its kind. And I like to use, I like to do, I put like a couple of bay leaves in there, and I like to just cut up some like onions, garlic, some baby carrots and turnips. So good.
Ooh.
So good. And mine comes out, mine is typically like a little thicker. It's more on the side of stew.
Okay.
Soup. So it's a little thicker than like a traditional soup would be, but it's so good. And that over brown rice is just some of the most delicious stuff you'll ever eat.
Mm.
Like it's a cheat meal. It's really good and it's good for you. Like, you know, high in protein and all that good stuff. And then the flavor, like you can do it with white rice, but I like the flavor blend with brown rice.
And how about jasmine?
I like jasmine too. But I prefer, like, for this, I prefer that like, kind of nuttiness that brown rice brings to it.
How do you make brown rice without tasting like cardboard?
I just add a little butter, a little salt to all the rice that I make, really. And to make a good thing of brown rice, I put, like, I don't let the water cook out of brown rice. I add way too much water.
Okay.
Not way too much, but I add more where I have to, like, drain it off a little bit. Because
mm-hmm.
I feel like when you let the water cook out, it can be a little dry.
Right.
So I like to use a little too much water, and I'm sure, like, it strips the starch or whatever the hell you're supposed to get from brown rice. I'm sure it takes some of that out with it, and that's fine because I like it for the taste. But I make it so that it's cooked before all the water has cooked out and that it tends to stay moist for a little longer. But I don't cook a whole lot of brown rice at once because it doesn't keep like white rice does.
Mm.
It'll be dry really quickly no matter how well you store it.
Right. Okay. I thought I was the only one.
No,
so
not
that's
true.
Why I just
I cook it. I don't cook the water out of my brown rice. I leave a little bit in and I like to drain it out. I don't like the rice cooker for brown rice.
Okay.
And I don't know how, cause I know some people, they just put their rice and their water in at the same time. I don't do that. I let my water boil first and then I add my rice. Cause I feel like
people do it both ways.
That method has not failed me yet. I come, and it's funny because one of my homeboys is like, you make the best rice. And that's what I do. I don't cook it. I don't let the rice heat up with the water. I bring the water to a boil first and then I add my rice in.
And then you turn it down to simmer?
And I turn it down to simmer and cover it. Mm-hmm.
All
right. Yep.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And that keeps it, that helps, retain the moisture for me. So it's not like drying out.
Who inspired you to want to cook?
My mom. I'm from a big family. So I love to eat. I love to eat. Even when I was a skinny thing, I just love food.
Me too, girl. Me too.
And I mealtime is awesome. And not like, you know, I feel like as Americans, now we have this very weird relationship with food where we gorge ourselves for everything. And that's right. Not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about actual family mealtime where y'all get at the table and y'all sit and y'all talk and y'all like rolling your eyes in the back of the head, your head, because the food is so good. That's always like been the part of family and friends and relaxation times that I've liked, because it's not just the food, it's like that togetherness. So I just remember the first time I made something, I was 10, that I made something on my own. I was 10, and I asked my mom if I could make a soup. And it was such a weird request, and I literally just started grabbing things out of the, I had never, my mom, like, soup wasn't something that she made. I had gone to one of our old friends, like my mom's older, an elderly friend that she had, and she made a soup, and I was like, this is good as hell. I've never had soup like this. So one day I decided I wanted to make a soup, and the lady's name was Miss Hyman. And so I was looking, I'm like, we got corn. She made, like, it was a beef soup. I'm like, we got corn. We got peas and carrots. I'm gonna make a soup. And so I just went in and I just started grabbing things out of the refrigerator and I made a soup. And it was delicious. Like, my parents loved it. And I became the person who would just, like, make soup for my house. And I just, that feeling of my family liking the stuff that I cooked, it made me feel so good. I just love that feeling. I like feeding people. Mm-hmm. I like taking care of people just in general. And sometimes I'll hyperextend myself to do that because it's just something I love to do. But I love feeding people. That's why, like, when I was living in Maryland, you couldn't keep me out of the kitchen. I just like making people happy in that way. I just think it's a kindness, you know, because you don't really get anything out of it. Like, I don't, like, you're full just because you ate something. That don't mean I'm full. Like, I don't really get anything out of feeding a person other than I did something really nice for somebody and they really appreciated it.
Right. And for me, it's the simple things in life that matter. I think, sometimes life can get so complex. You can get so self-centered and so wrapped up into your own world.
Yeah.
That a lot of times people never take the time to extend out to others and look at others' needs.
Yeah.
And yeah.
They just need something small.
Right.
People don't always need, like, these big, we think about, you know, how much we can't do for a person. People don't always need these big gestures. Like, they don't need a watch or a, you know, something new. It's, you can put together a meal for $10, make it delicious, and somebody will be grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the thing that I love. You know, about it. And it's like, if that's really how I express my love for people. Like, if I tell you that I want to cook for you, or if I, like, get up and hop in the kitchen for you, you bae. Like, it's there's no getting around that. Like,
we go together then.
We go together. Like, for real, it's, 'cause I'm not, you know, I cook for my kids. That's it. My kids and my friends. So if, you know, so, and my friends are my babies too, you know, so it's just like, I love you if I'm gonna get in the kitchen and, you know, just do that. And 'cause that's how kindness was shown to me. You know, I just kind of remember that. I remember how good I felt that somebody thought of me enough to bring me a bowl of beans.
Right. Yes.
It's things like that, you know, that just really, I don't have a lot. Like, I'm not rich. I can't do a whole lot for you financially. I can hook you up with some chicken wings, though.
Right. So I can reach your belly's full.
Yeah, I can give you a fish plate that'll change your life. So,
yes.
You know, it's just that good feeling that comes with doing something nice for somebody that you're not really going to, you know, tangibly benefit from.
Right. And there's no expectations in return.
Right. Right. It's just like, you have some food. It's good. Okay. and that's that. It's a very simple gesture and it means so much.
It does. It means a lot. Where do you get your ideas from for your meals, or just something you just randomly, this is what I feel like eating today?
I do a lot of, I try to diversify what I cook. And I'm not saying that I have like a wide range of things that I cook, cause I don't, but I like to make things that are going to be good for me. Like I eat a lot. So that's it. Like, so I'm overweight because I eat a lot, you know, period. But since I know that's already an issue, I try to still go with things that are like wholesome and like lean, or, you know, that's going to benefit me. So I try to go for, okay, how am I going to get everything I want for this meal? What do I like? I like chicken. Chicken and broccoli. What can I add with this broccoli? Am I going to put it in a pita? Am I going to put it on pasta? Am I just going to eat it by itself? Like, so I just kind of go through what I can do with a meal that I've probably had a million times and make it just a little different. If that makes any kind of sense. Like chicken, you're not reinventing the wheel by making chicken and broccoli by any means. So you've had chicken and broccoli like 1,000 times. How can I do it differently? Yeah.
Right. Make it where it's not the same thing that you've had. Because I've gotten like that too. Sometimes you get in a rut.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why periodically we use our crock pot a lot.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that I can do different types of meals that I probably would have never thought of out of using the crock pot, but it doesn't consume a lot of your time. Like, oh, chili? Yes, Lord. Roger made this chicken chili. It was awesome. And I do this, this corn chowder. I don't know if it's technically chowder or not, but I called it corn chowder. A lot of times I'll take the recipes, because I'm trying to find a lot of recipes in the crock pots for the crock pot users. And I know we got white people to listen, but they're white and they're bland. Oh my God, they're flavorless. They're bland. You're like, ooh, who the hell made this? You're like, oh. And I'd be looking, they'd be like, 5 stars. I'd be like, 5 stars, my ass.
Yeah.
I was like, enjoy this foolishness.
Like, can you put egg and onion? An onion would have been lovely here.
Just some flavor to it. And so when I do my, I call it corn chowder. So a lot of times I use like frozen corn, because I ain't gonna, fresh corn would probably be excellent. One time I do fresh corn, but I normally do frozen corn. I do like a can of cream corn, and I do like a can of, if I remember, white corn.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that, and basically any vegetable. So I have potatoes, I have onions, green peppers, bell peppers, garlic, anything I put my hands on, I'll dump it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can either do it half and half, or you could do it with milk.
Okay.
Or you know, just get that creamy base and put it on low for a few hours. And I also like to chop in jalapeno peppers.
Yeah.
And you get it has such a beautiful, and the longer you let it sit, the more spicier the jalapeno peppers get, and I wish I could explain it in more detail. That's kind of a quick version of it. It's mwah.
I find that jalapenos and corn are a really good blend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're a really good blend together.
Yeah, I like to do that when I make my Southwestern salad for Roger.
Mm-hmm.
I like the chicken breast, and I do, he loves corn, so we like to do the corn and the peppers and the black beans.
Mm-hmm.
And all stuff in it. You know, sometimes, you know, you throw like not heavy rice, but you know, throw a few pieces of rice across. Oh,
right.
When I tell you, thing is, because a lot of times when I go out, I'll taste something and I'll be like, I can make this at home. A lot of times, like, that's how my mind ticks. And if I can't figure it out, I try to go online and Google it. Because a lot of times you preparing it at home is going to be, because I love to go out and eat, y'all. Please don't get me wrong. But a lot of times you make it at home, it's going to be a lot healthier. Because you can modify the salt content, the sugar salt content, the sodium content. You know, you can modify the fat content. You know, you can change it to however you want to. And I've just realized that over time when I taste things, and a lot of times by the time I'm finished tweaking it to the way I like it, a lot of times it tastes a lot better than what you get in a restaurant.
Mhm. Yeah, I much prefer home cooking to restaurant food, even when it's like quote unquote fine dining.
Yeah,
it's just something that it feels better for the soul.
You know, it does. It's just something about it that just warms your heart.
Mm-hmm.
What is the most unique thing you've ever eaten before?
The most unique thing I've ever eaten before. Okay, it was not something I cooked.
Okay.
It was some type of, it was squid, but it was prepared, like, one of my neighbors, one of my old neighbors is Filipino. And so it was some type of grilled squid.
That sounds delicious.
It was good. Like, it took me a minute because it's like a whole squid on a skewer.
Yeah, so, squid is a little different.
Yeah. So, I like calamari. This was not calamari. So, like, you know, like the fry, you know, like we have the fry, because, you know, we batter and fry everything. So, like, that battered fried calamari, that's right up my alley. This was not that. But it was good. Like, there was a good, it had, like, a good smoky flavor to it. It was that, and she did some sort of pork dish that had, like, pork and peppers and, I think, rice. Those were really good. And you think, you know, like, who hasn't had pork? But it was just the way it was prepared. That right. was just a little, it was different from anything that I had. It was really good. But I say, like, that was probably I forgot about that time I ate raccoon.
Oh, how was that?
That was, it's very interesting because, you know, they say everything tastes like chicken.
It don't taste like no chicken.
It doesn't taste like chicken. It tastes like, it's a little rubbery.
Right.
Like, it's a little...
Probably tastes wild.
Yeah, it tasted like I was eating meat marinated in armpit. Like, I wasn't a fan of it at all. I was not a fan. My favorite uncle...
Lean!
It was very lean. My favorite uncle cooked it. So, like, he was my favorite uncle. He was like, try this, my girl. And I was like, I don't want it. He was like, come on, this is, you know. So he's my favorite uncle. The man has never steered me wrong. Girl, I was lied to that day.
How dare you lie to me?
But I was like, this is absolutely terrible.
Right, because it's a small, lean animal, so I'm pretty sure it's not going to be juicy, you know.
Now, you know what is oddly good? Rabbit.
I've never had rabbit.
Rabbit is good. There's a place, now I've only had it at one place. It's this restaurant in D.C. It's right in the Gallery Place, Chinatown area. It's called Zaytinya. It's right across the street from the Martin Luther King Library. If you're in D.C. Listening, I highly recommend going there. But they do rabbit and lentils. It's called mezza. Like, the style is mezza, which is like tapas, but for Mediterranean food. So it was rabbit. And it almost looked like a little chicken drumette, the way it was, you know, the way it was presented or whatever. But it was that and some lentils, and it was really, really tender and really good. Like, the flavor was really great. So the squid and the raccoon were, like, the most out there things that I hadn't had. And, you know, I hate raccoons, so, like, I hate raccoons in general. Like, I think they're horrible creatures, and they have feet hands, and you're not supposed to run on your hands, so fuck raccoons. Like, I don't get with them at all. Like, why are you walking on your hands, you little creepy fucker? And they have attitudes, too. Mm-hmm. I don't like, there's a lot of woodland creatures I don't like. Raccoons are, like, low, like, really on the bottom. Like, they're awful. So there's all that. Like, they're just a completely useless animal. All they do is go in your garbage, burrow in your, like, your attics or your crawl space.
Once you got them, it's hard to get them fuckers to leave from whatever.
It's an act of Congress. And they're pretty, they're, like, worse than squatters. Like, they get really testy when you try to get them the hell up out of there. Like, I've never seen anything like it. You don't have a fucking job, but you've decided that my crawl space is your house.
Right.
For you and your ugly ass babies. No. Do not like them. They, I just, what do they contribute? They're not even like beavers. They don't build dams. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, they don't collect nuts. They don't do anything to help with compost. Like, they're just a useless, they look like useless slackers. They even look shifty. We could get raccoons the hell up out of here forever, and I would not complain.
You wouldn't shed a tear?
Not want to. Wouldn't miss you. Wouldn't miss you.
What food event do you look forward to each year?
Oh, boy.
Like festivals and things like that.
I used to really, Bro Bridge outside of New Orleans had a crawfish festival that was really good. I used to like that. Ponchatoula, which is an hour outside of New Orleans, had a strawberry festival, which was just delicious. Like, Ponchatoula, Louisiana is really known for their strawberries, and it's so good. When I lived in D.C. or the D.C. area, Restaurant Week is fun because you get to experience places that you wouldn't necessarily go to normally or couldn't necessarily afford normally. And then they get you hooked on those places like a fucking drug dealer, and now you're trying to eat through shit you can't afford.
Right. You got to save up
50 weeks out of the year, but, you know, whatever. Boy. Now you have goals and realize why you
and aspirations and shit. You're like, hey.
So that was one of my favorite things in D.C. One of my regrets that I never did when I was in D.C., I never went to Truckaroo, which is like all of the I went to Truckaroo once. I only went to Truckaroo once. And that was like all the food trucks in one place. And it's so terrific.
Mm.
It's so terrific. The one time I went, I ate myself silly because they had, there was a place they had Indian food, and it was really kind of racist now that I think about it, because they were like in turbans and big ass fake mustaches, and the food was pretty good, but I'm like, this is kind of fucked up.
Like, these aren't real Indians.
I don't think this man is Indian at all.
No.
They had that. They had like the duck fat fries. There was curbside cupcakes.
Ooh.
There was a, oh man, what was that other truck that I liked? There was, I think it was Luke's Lobster had a truck. They would do like lobster rolls, which is pretty good. So there were just a lot of different, that was a fun event, in DC. I have not found any food events here. And this was kind of a crazy summer, and I'm sure they had things, here during the summer, but I haven't yet experienced the Pittsburgh food life.
Okay, cool. We have a thing here where they get like a lot of food trucks here. So I've never actually eaten off of a food truck. Because like food trucks are fairly new here. You know what I'm saying? Like they've been like in like the larger cities and you hear about them, but they're fairly new here. You see them rolling around and things like that. So I need to get on top of that, so I can try and experience that. Because a lot of people say, depending on what it is, they say it's very, very good.
Yeah. And the thing, I mean, like the sometimes the concept of it is so funny and seedy, because it's like, they're like little food prostitutes. Like, hey baby, want a party? Come have this lobster roll out this truck. Like everything you've been told to do. You've been told not to do when you were a child, aka go to a stranger holding out fucking candy outside of a van. That's exactly what you do for a food truck.
You break all the rules.
Way to think it through. And I think we're just a society of rebels, and that's why food trucks seem so appealing, because you're doing exactly what your parents told you not to do your entire life.
Right.
Don't take candy from strangers unless you're giving them money. Like, what the fuck?
Then we don't care.
Right. I wonder, do you remember how, I don't know if this was a rumor for you, but there was like the rumor where the ice cream man was always like hustling weed and drugs in addition to ice cream. I wonder if there are any food trucks doing that. Like, who's got the Korean barbecue tacos and the yayo? I wonder about that.
That wouldn't surprise me. Because it's smart, because they're portable, like they're constantly like going around the city. So it's not like they are in a spot, but I guarantee you with something like that, you would have to know how to eat it, if that makes sense. Like, you couldn't just walk up and be like, hey, yo.
Yeah, you have to have a secret handshake.
Right. Or either how they would do it, like your hamburger would have weed like in the burger.
Mm-hmm.
Shit like that. Like your fries would have, you know, weed sprinkled across the fries. But what's that? Oh, that's oregano. You don't want none of that.
And, you know, I'm such an idiot. Like, I'm not good at being a seedy character. I don't necessarily have a poker face. So I'd be like walking up, hey, I'm here for the special, wink, wink. And like, yeah, so that place would get busted in record time, because it's, you know.
I would take everybody down. So, yeah, me and you sound the same, though. So That, you know, that's why people like me say no to drugs, kids, because me and everybody else will be going to jail,
Everybody will be going to jail. Well, see, and you know what the thing is? See, I don't, like, I grew up, like, I don't know anything. I don't see anything. I wasn't there. Who told you that? Like, I'm the one doing all the time because I'm the one with the weed sandwich. And they're like, where'd you get it from? I don't know. I didn't get it from anyone. It just came up the sky.
Right.
It's raining weed sandwiches. Did you know that cloudy with a chance of meatballs was actually a thing? And apparently there was weed in the sky. That's what happened.
Right. And nobody tell me this. I don't know where this came from. But this sandwich right here? Mm-mm.
Look, even if I go to jail, my kids still got to be out on the streets. I ain't snitching. Sorry.
No. Not over no food, no. Like, yeah, but like, yeah, dog. My mom went to jail over a weed burger, dog.
Yeah, it's not a game. That's gotta suck if you go to jail for, you know, having weed food. Like, that can't be. Like, cause how do you tell the people in your cell, you know, they're in there for murder and shit? And you're like, I
gotta be all hard.
Yeah. Bought a burger. Like, what the fuck?
But like, I had a brownie cake, dog. A brownie cake. A weed brownie cake. Word. That's why you were here with 25 years to life.
Oh. There's just no winning. You're gonna have to fight every day.
Right.
Like, if you go to jail because you got caught with like a weed something off the food truck, you have to immediately walk into the jail, find the first broomstick, break it with your foot, and stab somebody in the chest, stick them like a vampire. Like that's the only way you're gonna survive that.
You have to show you gangster.
Yeah. Immediately. You cannot delay.
Because other than that, ain't no way to survive.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
At all. What is your favorite thing to eat that you don't make?
That I don't make. I don't make desserts at all. Like, I'm not a baker. So my favorite thing to eat that I don't make is key lime pie.
I love key lime pie.
I love key lime pie.
Especially if it's made with fresh limes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am, and fresh lime juice, what you talking about?
Yep, it's so good. Because I like sweet and tart, and it's just, yes.
That's like the perfect
mixture. It's just
mixture.
Perfect, and especially if they have like a good crust. Because to me, for any pie to be good, like the crust is just as important. Like, to me, it's probably more important than the filling. Because I need to, you know, savor you with, you know, I like to have crust left over. So I just have like pieces of crust that I just eat on its own. So I think my second favorite thing that I eat but don't cook is chicken pot pie. I don't make that.
No, I've never made it.
It's a complex undertaking.
Right. And to me, it's almost like I can say a pool of food with a covering. That's how I look at pot pie.
Yeah.
You have like all this stuff going across the bottom. Then you have this tarp across it.
Yeah.
It's flaky. It's crunchy. Mm-hmm. It's fluffy. It's bready. Like, yeah. I can't explain it all in one.
Yeah. So it's a complicated meal. It's like the shaft of meals, if you will.
Right. Right. And I've had
complicated meal.
All complicated. But some of the best shit you'll ever have, especially if it's made correctly.
You need somebody's grandmama's recipe.
Right. You really.
I don't want the recipe because I'm not gonna do it. Like, there are certain things I've decided. Like, I don't boil my own crawfish. I refuse.
Okay.
I can do it, but it's like I gotta pick it up, and like a few crabs is one thing, but like pounds and pounds of crawfish for people, girl, I'm not doing that. I'm gonna go buy a sack. So that's one of those things. I just don't want to know how to do that. Like, I have no desire.
So yeah, I come up and eat, but that part of it, yeah, I completely understand. What is your favorite thing to eat that you do make?
My favorite thing to eat that I do make is, it's got to be a tie between jambalaya.
Okay.
And crawfish pies.
Ooh, crawfish pies.
Mm-hmm. I make them. They almost look like little tart shells. And it's a stupid easy recipe. I actually got it from my sister-in-law. It's like you do like breadcrumbs, crawfish. I add crab meat. I don't do like the actual whole crabs. I just buy, you know, like lump crab or claw crab, you know, claw meat or whatever out of the jars that they have in the seafood section. And I use celery, green peppers, onion, garlic, which I use that in pretty much, like I said, a lot, almost everything that I make. Heavy cream. What else do I put in? Heavy cream and, chicken broth, not stock, but just chicken broth to kind of give it that moist consistency. And if you do 2 pounds of crawfish, and make it to the scale that I use, it covers about, I want to say, 24 shells. So I guess a pound per dozen, if my math is correct.
That sounds delicious, because remember the crawfish place I was telling you about? One dude, I didn't try, but he said they had crawfish soup over jasmine rice. I said, I want to get that next time. I looked at him like, I'll be getting that next time.
It sounds like it could almost be like an etouffee, which is kind of like crawfish, it's usually like crawfish or shrimp, in like a tomato-based type sauce. It can be a little, it's not quite soup, it's probably not what he was talking about, but it sounds like it could be almost like that. Crawfish and whatever over rice, you kind of can't miss. I make a really good crawfish pasta too. I do a lot with crawfish.
Wow.
Yeah, crawfish pasta is, I have two ways to make that. One, if I'm really being lazy, I do, a can of a cream of shrimp soup. Creamy shrimp soup, the crawfish tails, my regular onion, blah, 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 seasonings and the pasta. But the one I prefer to do when I'm doing, like, I'm putting a little more effort into it is kind of like a cheese base. So I use, a couple of white cheeses, like mostly mild cheeses, not too much, just enough to kind of give it a little gooiness.
And, right. Without being overwhelming.
Right. And I like to do it with like thicker pasta. So I like to do it with linguine or fettuccine. I think, it's better with that to me, because I think you can kind of grab onto it more. I've seen people do it with like bow tie pasta and penne and,
your smaller pasta.
Yeah, but it's kind of, to me, it just seems like a little more of a hassle, to kind of grab it and I'm for efficiency. So, I tend to like that. Like, I'll do that with the cheese, like a little bit of cream. Again, still using like my peppers and all of that good stuff. So it's hard for me to pick my favorite thing, because I'm not too shabby of a cook. So it's, you know, I like even some of my made up meals. Like, some of my best meals have been what's in the fridge. Let's see what we can make it do.
to get rid of stuff before it starts.
Yeah.
I've been there, done that. What is your favorite food to stash, like from your kids or from everybody? You're like, you know what, this is mine, and ain't none of y'all get none.
My favorite food to stash is probably, that's a good question. I would have to say, don't touch my last Clausen pickle if you value your life. Like, don't touch it. Don't look at it too hard. I don't, you know, I feel like your eyes might evaporate some of the vinegar. Just don't even look directly at it.
Make it not taste as good.
And you're gonna, your gaze has detracted from the crispness of my pickle, and I don't appreciate it. So yeah, don't touch my last Clausen pickle. And don't eat my Keebler Deluxe Grahams.
Oh.
I will die for this shit, son. Do not.
It is not a game.
It is not a game. My Keebler Deluxe Grahams, you will lose your life. And a lot of people, like, people, you know, bang for, like, the Girl Scout cookies and, like, Thin Mints or whatever. And I really like those. But if my kids are like, hey, you know, are you going to eat these or whatever, I'll be, you know, yeah, you can have them. I might sigh and roll my eyes and be like, fine. You're not getting my deluxe grams ever. Don't even ask. My kids might not even ask. Do not ask. Like, why are you even playing these games? Because now you're going to make me be a bitch because I'm not going to be nice in my response. Like, what do you want? Do you think I was taken over by aliens? Why are you even here?
I told you this was not a game for you ass.
Mm-mm. mm-mm, don't do it. And whenever I bring them into the house, and I don't do it often, because when it's a snack that only you eat, you run the risk of either one, like gorging them and, you know, eating way too much, and you know, or you keep them around too long and they get stale or whatever. So I don't get them very often as it is. So on a rare occasion when I bring them in, I'm like, look, y'all know the drill. Don't touch my shit. I have to hit them with juvie lyrics. Don't touch my shit. Don't buy my shit. I got guns in the house and I hide my shit. Leave my cookies alone. Don't touch them.
And I will use them again.
I will bust caps all up in these ceilings for taking my deluxe gram. Do not play with me. The fact that I've already resigned myself that my retirement home is going to be straight trash. I gave that up a long time ago.
You don't know what your expectations.
If I get running water and electricity, that's a win. That's way more than I expect. And my daughter, she keeps telling me that I'm not going to go to a retirement home. I'm going to live with her. So I just know that my twilight years are going to be like whatever happened to Baby Jane.
Oh, Lord.
But y'all, Mom. But y'all, Blanche, y'all. That's just going to, you know, she's going to show up with jacked up stage makeup one day. And I'm like, oh, I know what this is.
I've seen this story before.
I know. I always knew it would be you.
And they decide to pull the plug.
Man, it's just, yeah, you know, it's because I had my kids fairly young. I was 22 when I had my son, and I was 24 when I had my daughter, and I was a fairly sheltered kid. Like I moved out, got my apartment and was like pregnant within months. So when I finally got my own apartment, because I'd share things or, you know, whatever, where I was kind of like the guy on the couch or whatever when I moved out of my parents' house. But once I got my own place, it was like, okay, pregnancy time. So I was really young, you know, like when I had them. So in a lot of ways, I grew up with my kids.
20s is very young.
I didn't have to make actual grown-up decisions until I became a mother. Like, I was always kind of able to fly by the seat of my pants and do what I want because I was young and I didn't have responsibilities. So I have to actually make serious play calls, and I'm 22. And, I mean, when you're 22, like, you really don't know shit about shit.
And about life. That's hard to tell people. Yes, it ain't no joke. Like, you really don't learn. I tell people, you literally don't learn about yourself until you get in your 30s. And that's hard for people to understand, because you can go through your whole 20s and still not be mature and still not know anything about life.
Yeah. So it was just, you know, I had all these responsibilities, and I'm jacked up a lot of them. So, and then, I mean, there's just certain things where I'm just still, and I'm also just kind of young at heart. Like, there's a lot of things I still like cartoons. I will still get in front of the television on a Saturday morning with my cereal and watch cartoons, and I'm almost 38. I like, you know, just a lot of kids stuff. So
me too.
So I'm not particular. I still listen to like a lot of hip hop. A lot of my kids and I listen to some of the same music. So it's just things like that where, of course not on their level, but you know, we have, I think, a lot more common ground than I had with my parents. And I think some of it is because I have sort of a youthful outlook on life. So it makes it sometimes funny when I have to be the authoritarian, the disciplinarian, whatever, because it's, you know, like we've been cool up to this point. It's like, okay, now I have to remind you of that other thing that I do. And so,
like you ain't going to talk to me like I'm your buddy.
Right.
Because I'm not. Like I'll go upside your head. Thank you.
Like, yeah. And sometimes I have to, you know, because like we'll joke so much and then I'm, you know, they'll get these little, you know, they act like they disjointed their eyeballs and they do all that heavy sigh. I'm like, who are you sighing at?
Right.
You have not done enough in life to be this exasperated, so I need you to answer some questions.
Like, what
has you so tested?
What clock did you punch today?
It's like, you need to get it off your chest because I'm about to pluck out your eye like Padme if you roll it at me one more time. But, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing. And then there are, you know, there are just some things, like I'm really laid back on a lot of things, but then when there are things that I won't budge on, they can be a little put out. And then teenagers are entitled jerks, even the good ones, like they have those
up and down days. Yeah.
My 13-year-old left her laptop in New Orleans. Now you're 13 with a laptop, so let's just deal with that right now.
Right, all in itself.
Like, you have a laptop computer. So, okay, so that's your, you know, whatever. So she left it in New Orleans. I told her several times, you need to make sure that this laptop makes it back here, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, of course, she didn't. Like, she didn't care. She thought it was a game. So she thinks that my laptop is her laptop, and I, when I leave town, I bring my laptop back with me, so I don't understand how you think this is going to work.
Yeah, I don't have the problem that you have.
Yeah, so... And like I had to catch myself because I'm like asking for permission and cutting deals to get my laptop. Oh, are you gonna have it all night? I was like, who are you?
No, you had a laptop, right?
Am I going to have my laptop all night? Let's talk about that.
Right. You left yours. Remember that?
Yeah. Let's see where your question went wrong. I mean, are you actually looking at it? If I want to look at the glowing A for 8 hours straight, that's my prerogative because it's my laptop and I
brought
my belongings.
And I bring mine with me.
Yeah. So it's a funny thing, and I'm not nearly as strict as my parents were.
Right, because it makes a big difference.
Yeah, one of the things my mom was not making 2 and 3 dinners. Like, if you didn't eat a certain thing, you were short. Like,
oh yeah, mama. If you didn't like what she made, you ate bologna cheese, whatever else is in there. She's like, this is the only meal. There's no threefold. There's no accommodating nobody.
She wasn't. Not only was she not cooking anything else, but you were not dirtying her kitchen with your petty foolishness. Like, this is the meal for the night. You're either gonna eat it or you're not. And so I have a little more leeway than that because I hate it. And I think that's, again, goes to, you know, my loving to feed people and loving people to be happy after meals. I hated eating things that I didn't like or having to choke down things that I didn't think tasted good. So I'm a lot more communicative with that. Like, I'll look at them like, hi, is this? And if they make like a face, I'm like, you don't have to eat it. you know, I'm a little more bendy with that. I won't necessarily, sometimes if I'm doing like a few meals at a time, I'll cook more than one thing. Or if I know that somebody just really doesn't like something, and that's always been their thing. And if it doesn't put me out, then I'll just like make 2 meals and it's just like, okay, we have more than one thing to pull from.
Yeah.
So I'm a little more, loose with that than my parents were. Definitely.
Yeah. That's definitely a generational thing, and that's also because of the relationship that you have mm-hmm. with them.
I never made my kids eat liver.
I love liver, but I'm just a weird kid.
I broke that abusive cycle, no ma'am.
That
abusive cycle that Southern children have to endure of eating liver. It's so gross. To me. It is
right. For most people, it is. But like I say, I am a very, not my mother, she was like that, but she didn't have a problem with me
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. I ate everything and anything. So whatever she cooked, I ate because I didn't care. I just liked to eat. Like, literally, I was that kid that liked to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I like liver. I like it smothered. I like it fried, lightly fried with onions. Like, so liver, like I said, and I'm one of the few people that I know that love liver. I have to order at restaurants because I don't really cook it because my husband don't, you know, so I'm not going to go through that process if I'm the only one eating it.
Yeah, plus I don't like the smell. Like, that was one of the things that didn't, that got to me. I'm not crazy about the smell of liver.
Ah, okay.
So I couldn't, that was the other, like, even if my kids liked it, I don't think I'd ever cook it for them because I couldn't deal with the way, like, it's not like a bad smell. It's just weird to me. And
it's an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Either it's one of the few foods, either you like it or you don't.
And it brings up some painful memories.
Well, a lot of people, so don't feel bad. What is your favorite thing to drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic, or both?
My favorite thing to drink is Maker's Mark and ginger ale.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think I gave, I wouldn't say I completely gave up white liquor, but right around 35, I started re-exploring the life of brown liquor, and I was like, yeah, this is where I am right now.
That stuff burn your chest.
But you have to, well, now, I like the good stuff.
Okay.
Like, Maker's Mark is pretty smooth. Like, I like the way Maker's Mark tastes. I like scotch, but I like good scotch.
Okay. Yeah, when you get grown, you will spend your money on the Top Chef. Yeah. Like, it ain't called Top Chef for no reason.
Yeah. So I have certain things, and I mean, you're gonna get that warm feeling no matter what, but I don't like that warm punch you in the chest. That hot punch in the chest feeling.
Right.
I like that warm.
Catch your breath.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to prove anymore.
I don't
prove my tolerance or any of that. Like, I did all that in my teens and 20s and drank all kinds of awful stuff that I shouldn't have because I had like 15 shots of Everclear. Bitch, why? Why? Why would you do that to yourself? But that's what I was, you know, because that's apparently what was hot in my 19-year-old streets. But now, I think my favorite thing to drink is, Maker's Mark and soda. I like scotch, but yeah, that's when bourbon has went out recently. My favorite non-alcoholic thing to drink is, any berry lemonade. Like, I love berries and lemons mixed. So a strawberry lemonade, or a raspberry lemonade, really good.
Raspberry has got to be one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. My mom hated raspberry for a really long time. And raspberry, like fresh raspberries, they can get like mushy pretty quickly. So I'm not necessarily a fan of fresh raspberry. But since my mom hated all things raspberry, I thought I did. But like a lot of raspberry flavored things are delicious.
Yes, they are. And a lot of like pies and things, like take like the raspberry and drizzle it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like raspberry sauce drizzled over cheesecake is just magic.
That's everything.
It's magic.
Because it gives it that sweet and that tart all mixed up together.
Mm-hmm.
Mwah. Ain't it? There's nothing like it in the world.
Nope. I love it. It's probably one of my favorite flavor combinations, and I feel so, it's like such a funny thing because I don't think I started really messing around with raspberry until I was an adult. I like Abita Purple Haze, and that's kind of like a raspberry wheat beer.
That is everything.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only one. Uh-huh. That's one of my favorite beers.
Yeah.
And I've tried all the flavors and I like them all.
And it has, yeah, it's got like a raspberry, it's a raspberry wheat. Really good.
That is, I love that. What is the worst thing you have ever ate or cooked? Or both?
The worst thing I ever ate has got to be, let's not count liver.
Okay, we'll scratch that one off.
I don't like liver. The worst thing I've ever eaten is actually at a restaurant here in Pittsburgh. It's some Italian restaurant. I can't remember the name. They have these meals that sound so promising, but there's something off about the way they flavor it. So it'll be like, they might have a dish and it has Italian sausage and they literally just like throw all the stuff together and their sauce is really thin and watery and gross. And I just don't like it. At all. Worst thing I've ever cooked, I would have to say, as a child, when I was exploring foods, there was this kind of bread type thing, and I think it's called chapatis, or it's spelled chapatis, and it's some kind of just like oil and flour and whatever. It's not like a complicated bread. It's almost like a fried dough type thing. And so I made that and it was awful. It was really awful. They were like little rocks. So that's when I was a child, so I'll give myself a curve for that. As an adult, the worst thing I made was when I first moved out on my own. when I first moved out on my own, but when I moved in with my ex-husband, I made catfish, and the fillets okay. were really thick, and I was not, that you wasn't something like I wasn't, definitely wasn't cooking at the level that I'm cooking at now. I was really new to a lot of things, and I wasn't much of a fryer. I've just very recently learned how to fry chicken. So I wasn't much of a fryer.
Okay.
And so the combination of the really hot oil and
the thickness
of the catfish fillet. Right. So it was raw in the middle. It was
right
on the outside. So that was like my, you know, my faux pas, my mistake. The nasty, like if I made something like straight up nasty, worst thing I've ever cooked that was just bad, like not part of a mishap or whatever. That's hard to say. It's really hard for me not to like food in general. Like I most of the stuff that I don't like, it's because I messed it up and not so much the blend was bad. You know, like the flavors didn't go together. So most of my food mishaps as far as taste is concerned went to me like burning something or not necessarily being familiar with, like the first time I made eggplant parmesan, I didn't know about having to actually sweat the eggplant, so I didn't do that, so it tasted weird.
Oh, like sprinkle it, put the salt on it?
Sprinkle the salt on it and get that whatever out of it. So, like, things like that, not cutting, like, the bitter stems off of greens and, like, stuff like that. Like, those have been more of my food mishaps than anything.
Oh, don't feel bad, honey. Talking about greens, first time I cooked greens, I put them in a crock pot. They never got done. I threw them away. Oh, they looked at me like, they was like, oh, yeah, those put them on the stove. I was like, I don't know. They was taking too long.
Girl. That's a wrap. Like when you're learning how to do stuff, it's easy, especially early on. Like it's easy to want to throw in the towel.
Right, real quick.
Nah, we about to have Popeyes, and I'm over it.
Right, like, but now since I like said, like you said, frying and things. The first time I fried chicken was terrible. Mm-hmm. So for me, I've learned how to, and I guess because I'm down south, we use the catfish. You know, they come thick. Yeah. You just cut it in half because you look at it, you go like, that's gonna be too thick for what I'm trying. Do, but like you said, if you're not familiar, you don't know, it's your first time dealing with that, but especially catfish, that particular type of fish, it's not like your tilapia and them other types of fish, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just a different kind of fish in several ways, and there are a lot of people who don't like catfish because they're bottom feeders or whatever, or they don't like the texture, but I love catfish. I prefer it to be wild caught when I can get it, but most places, if you're not on the Gulf Coast or whatever, you're getting farm, you know, which all the things that come with that, you know, for better or for worse. You know, on the one hand, that means you can get it anywhere, but on the other hand, that means, you know, if you got a couple of sick fishies, you just got a bad batch and it's gross. So
that's true too. Yeah. That's true too. That's not the yes. It's not the same.
Yeah. So I now one thing that I don't like at all, like I don't bend on this, is rye bread.
I love rye bread.
I do not like rye bread, and I think what I don't like most, I think it is the caraway seeds that smells
okay.
have. Like when you bite into them and you smell it, I hate it and I cannot get past it. I cannot get past it. The smell of caraway seeds are so repulsive.
At least you know more than I do. I didn't know it had caraway seeds. Yeah. I was like, oh, it's crunchy.
Yeah, that's those little crunchy things.
They pay me no attention. I'm like, oh well.
I hate the smell. I hate. Overpowering smells when I'm chewing. Like, it's one thing to, like, smell your food or whatever, but, like, things that overpower and come through your nose when you're eating them, I don't like that. That's why I don't like cream soda, because cream soda has that strong smell to it. And I loved cream soda as a kid, but now that I'm an adult, number one, it's super, super, like, sickly sweet. And so it's like...
Yeah, I haven't had that in years.
Yeah, it's super sweet, and then you get that scent in the back of your nose. I can't do it.
And you can almost smell it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want eating to be like a full scale sensory experience, like where I feel everything. Like I don't I don't like.
You trying to go to the next level with the food?
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I just want to like my food as a friend. I don't need you to take me over and become my lover. Like, just relax.
We don't need to go together.
Can we keep it platonic? This is
crazy. Right. This is you know, you're being too intimate with me. Come on.
Yeah. I don't need my food to be my soulmate. I don't want us to become one in that sense.
Now, it's certain foods, you know, depending on what it is, we can become one anytime it wants to.
I do some wonderful things with gumbo. Like, I can make a gumbo that'll make you fight everybody. I can do that. And I can make a mean meatball and spaghetti.
Ooh, that's old school right there.
Yeah, I do a pretty good meatballs and spaghetti. My meatballs are like bomb. Like, I can't even say, I make really great meatballs. They're just a good consistency. They're huge. They're just.
You know what? That's something I've never been able to do. When I make my meatballs, they just fall to pieces. Like, I can't explain it, probably because I haven't got the consistency that I want, or I'm not using something correctly.
I use an egg per pound of meat.
Okay.
And I add probably about 3/4 of a cup of breadcrumbs per pound of meat.
Okay.
So, like, those two things kind of help it bond a little bit.
Yeah, the bonding is my issue. Like, making it a circle ain't the problem.
Yeah.
The problem, once you get it in there, you try to, you know, fry it and cook it to get it to brown.
Mm-hmm.
Party over in my book.
I break mine. I bake mine.
Oh.
Yeah, I bake mine. Because I found that sometimes they break apart a little too much, and they don't necessarily cook as evenly.
No.
So I bake mine. I bake my meatballs. I bake them for about, I pay attention to them, but I at least 45 minutes.
Okay, next time, that's what I'm going to have to do.
I would say bake them, like, use the egg, as long as you don't have an egg allergy or whatever, of course, but
uh-oh.
I would use egg and breadcrumbs, and then I add, like, a little bit of, I add diced onions and garlic to everything. Sometimes I'll do, if I'm feeling really fancy, and I typically am, I'll do, like, chopped up bell pepper too. So when I do that, I definitely add a little more. I add more breadcrumbs and eggs, but I still like it's still a very because sometimes you'll have a meatball and you can just taste the breading in it. I don't put it so that it's overpowering the meat, but enough to make sure that it's like a good bonding agent. If I need like another egg to kind of make it a little more, you know, togethery. that's what I do.
Yes, I really do feel you. I want to tell you thank you. This has been a fun ride with you. I'm not going to talk to you forever, but I was hoping she got to go and, you know, stuff like that. But I was like, you know what? You have been so much fun. Tell everybody how they can get in contact with you, sweetie.
Okay, so I tweet a lot. So I'm on Twitter at beauty_Jackson. I am at The Good and Terrible Show. That's thegoodandterribleshow.com. Both my partner and I, we both occasionally tweet from The Good and Terrible's Twitter account, good_in, like Nancy, _terrible. Very soon I'm going to be going back into the world of blogging for my own personal site, which is thebeautyjackson.com. There's still a lot of stuff in the archives if you want to look at that. And all of those things have, like, email, contact me, you know, whatever information there. And I also weekly blog Saint stuff at gridirongals.com. So I'm trying to get heavy in these streets. I'm a busy girl.
What's wrong with that?
I'm a busy girl, but there are a lot. Yeah, so there are a lot of ways to get in contact with me. And if you happen to listen to the show and you have, you know, any questions, or, you know, maybe want to give topics, or just want to say hi or say that you hate us, thegoodandterribleshow@gmail.com is the email for that. So.
Thank you, sweetie. And I want to tell everybody out there, this is your first time.
Yes.
Hear her voice. Please, please, please go check them out on Nicole Slither Podcast Network.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her partner are hilarious. And everybody that's a premium member knows how I feel about black women. I love black women podcasts. It's like, I don't care what you're talking about. I fall in love with you because I'm a black woman. I'm like, y'all black, we black. Everything is blackity, black, black,
yep.
black. So y'all please go check them out and support them and let them know that you heard her right here on Lip Smacking Good. And we're going to get her and her buddy.
Yes.
On it is coming. It is coming.
Like I said, we're going to cut out.
Oh, we gonna cut a monkey. They ain't ready for all that foolishness.
Mm-mm.
They ain't ready for all that, but.
And I'm just gonna let you know, if you faint a heart, we cuss a lot on there. Like not only do we cuss a lot, but we're a little raunchy. Like we're super raunchy. Like we're really, really raunchy. So, you know, strap in, bae.
If you love us, you're gonna love them. Just know that you don't go over there, you're going to feel right at home. So like I said, if this is your first time, please go show them love and support and let them know that you heard them over here at the Black Guy Who Tips Network. So to everybody out there, I want to tell y'all have a good one. And this is another episode of Lip Smacking Good. Bye, guys.